I wanted to update you this month on some items of interest. Let me give you some quick updates on what's in the written report that's in your agenda packet, new issues that have come to bear, and I'd like to give it to also on the bond, recent groundwater legislation, and the grazing project that Region 6 is leading for the state in terms of a statewide policy. Let me start with a few announcements, though. We are canceling our October 8th and 9th board meeting in South Lake Tahoe and instead moving many of those items to the month of January. We had a lot of speakers for our climate change workshop who could not make it, some key speakers, as well as some other changes that we're going to move to January. We will also move the update on marijuana in our region to that month. And the Heavenly Ski Resort is expanding its facility for summer activities, so you'll hear more about that in January as well. And I also wanted a reminder, because this is coming forward, for our Logan Olds with VVWRA is hosting an open house on September 26th from 9 to 11. They are a zero-emission facility at POTW. That's just phenomenal. And so he's having an event to memorialize that huge milestone. And so he invited the board if they would like to come. And Sue can help me if you're interested.
I'm going to break in just to say that that's one of the highlights of the Mojave tour that Anna Garcia will lead. So I encourage board members to go on that to see the Victorville plant, how they're off the grid. It's pretty incredible.
I'm going to turn a little bit now to your packets and just give you some updates on some of the information that's in there. We talked a little about the city of Barstow cleanup, and the staff continue to do good work on that, and the city of Barstow is continuing to be a good partner with us. We met with them, their staff did, on September 1st, and how we can collaborate with each other. They will be revising some of their plans based on our discussions. This is, as you may not recall from the last update, this is the area where the perchlorate plume is mixing with the nitrate plume of the city of Barstow. So they're working with us so that we could maybe solve both problems in a way. So, and we hope, as I get to the bonds, that agencies that help out what I guess we call the EJ issue like that, you know, benefit from that in some way. And the bond does create that opportunity of partnership. There's updates in your packet on some of our military-based cleanups. Your main item today on managed natural attenuation will go further into that issue. RODs, which are the vehicle by which these cleanup agreements come our way, we will have one ready for signature for George Air Force Base for landfill and soil from the old ski range, and that's talked about in your packet. And the Marine Corps Logistics Base is also proposing a ROD for 18 smaller sites, some groundwater, some soil, where they actually use, I'll call it MNA, so I don't say managed natural attenuation each time, with active remediation. I just draw that to your attention in your write-up because you'll hear a little bit more about that in the discussion. I'm going to switch now to Aramol, which also is an update in your packet. Good news to report there. I think you may have a couple pictures in your packets. There's progress, and I guess that's what we all wanted to see is based on the environmental damage that occurred from that, we wanted to see progress in terms of repairing. So there's been great work on the Imperial Stream and wetlands that were destroyed there in 2011. They've implemented the restoration plan. More habitat delineation needs to occur for the permanent loss of the spring, the creek, and the wetland. As you recall, those are the areas that were destroyed. So we will likely see a cleanup and abatement order coming this direction, at least towards me, the next 6 months to kind of cement the final mitigation. But good news all in all. The Tahoe Summit, this is an annual event, and Dr. Horn attended this with me, where the governors of Nevada and California gather along with Senator Feinstein, Harry Reid, and others And it was a very interesting event, as they always are, to talk about progress and where they've gone. And it is a little bit of a political presentation by politicians. But what I would mind to mention, what was interesting, is I was able to attend a luncheon with the governors and the senators, and they delved into the issues in terms of nearshore pollution and other areas. And it was very exciting to see this focus from such high-level politicians for solving a problem in that basin. And I think you'll all be happy to hear, because previous Tahoe summits have pointed out inadequacies, or at least perceived political inadequacies, in how we handle timber fuels reduction by certain politicians. And I was heartened at this summit and at the lunch that when that issue came up again regarding Lahontan's requirements being too stringent, other agencies from the Forest Service and other ones came to our defense and said, no, it wasn't Lahontan. Their issues had been fixed, and in fact, you know, we're moving forward. So it was sort of a healing to see all of our partners in the basin coalesce with us, and that we are moving all in the right direction. I was able to attend a separate luncheon with Senator Feinstein, which was even more intriguing, where she really wanted to drill down further with a few of us about what could be done, particularly in the areas of funding. So I'll be having a follow-up meeting with her staff about what can we do. She and both Hillary committed to finding money to help us, so I'm not going to pass that opportunity up. So we'll be sitting down with her staff in the next couple weeks to drill down in it. She also shared some very fascinating stories about her chairmanship on the Committee on Foreign Affairs and ISIS, which I could tell you offline sometime, but it was fascinating. We have, as you can tell, our wonderful staff here from both offices. We are very lucky to are adding some new staff to the team. Chuck Curtis may have mentioned on his Leviathan briefing that Chris Stetler has rejoined our regional board. So again, he's one of our new staff, our senior water resource control engineer. Todd Batty has just joined our Victorville, or will be joining, I should say, our Victorville office at the end of the month. He will be in the DOD program with Cindy Minton. He's a registered professional geologist with over 20 years' experience. He's managed projects at Edwards Air Force Base and others. I don't know if any of you may know him. He has a great background, published papers, and so he's a fabulous addition to our team. And he'll be working on primarily Edwards Air Force Base and George Air Force Base projects. So with Will. Jim Carolyn has also joined our Tahoe office, and he is going to be replacing George in our office, who is retiring. And so they're actually allowing us to have two staff at the same time to cross-train each other. And George also has a wonderful background as a professional geologist and a hydrogeologist. He worked for Region 2 for a while, which is our Bay Area Regional Board. He's been a case manager for many projects, petroleum, and most recently worked on our Leviathan facility. So he brings a lot of knowledge and experience to the team. We're thrilled to have him. We're also going to be hiring Michelle Avila for our Tahoe, one of our administrative staff. We've had some promotions in that area and people moving on, and so we are adding Michelle. She comes from Sacramento. She's lived in Tahoe for many years, so she's like happy to come back. So we're thrilled to have her join us. She's got a range of experience. Things are looking up for our region. We're getting some new slots, even above and beyond what I just mentioned there. We have one engineer position that we're going to add to our Victorville office to help JCAS, much, much needed for the wastewater treatment work and work he's got in that unit. So Jay will be looking for someone to hire there. We also have a half-time engineer slot we'll be hiring for our Leviathan unit. And, you know, with all that additions and the hope maybe potentially of budget adds next year, we may be growing a smidge more, not by a lot, I don't think, but... And that's probably a good thing. I reported to the board in the past about our Victorville office moving to new and better facilities. Unfortunately, those negotiations fell through, and so that particular location isn't going to work. And so we begin anew for a search for a home. It's both a bad news and a good news. Based on the old plans, we've already outgrown this new place that we haven't even moved into yet. So maybe it's divine benefit here that that didn't happen, because we'll get a perhaps better digs. So we all hope. And Mike Plazek will be leading that search. I'm going to shift now to statewide policy. As you know, the State Board is initiating a lot of policies, and a handful of those are led by the regional boards. The Mercury Project, one of them is led directly by our region, and that's the Grazing Regulatory Action Project. I will call it GRAPS. I don't have, it's using the acronyms, but I'm not sure how to get around that one. And Cindy Wise is our lead staff person on that, with every single region is involved in that, because we have over 40 million acres of rangeland in California. 38% of the state is rangeland. And we have 122 impaired water bodies across the state that we know of. That's a lot. So we're beginning the listening sessions with the various stakeholder groups about what should a policy look like, what should it not look like, what should we consider, how do we factor in both opportunities as well as regulatory tools. This isn't a policy that is ripe for opportunities and partnerships with NGOs and other government agencies to help us get where we need to get. This is also a statewide policy. You're going to see a lot of variability because of the type of livestock you're talking about, the terrain between the regions. So a one-size-fits-all state policy will never work for this. And so that's mindful of everyone. And so far in briefing, the State Board members are very open to that as well. The listening sessions, and I mentioned it to the board members, in case any of you have any interest in attending any of these listening sessions, the first are November 3rd and November 17th. We'll meet with the environmentalists, the industry, local government, tribes, academia. So if any of you have interest in any of those, let me know offline. We will also be doing regional workshops so that those ranchers who can't make it to Sacramento, so we can accommodate them. So we will be, Pete, we're going to have one in Bishop. We will be having a local listening session in Bishop, another one in Redding, one in Ventura, and others yet to be designed. Let me give you a few updates. Something that I talked to you about last time was the bacteria counts in Griff Creek, which is a tributary on the north side of Tahoe. The levels are still exceeding our water board standards, and US EPA standards. Placer County, however, has issued a health advisory for water contact, and they continue to sample, which is good. We were sampling before they're taking over that responsibility. It's been over 2 months since we first found out this problem. Our staff are working with Placer County to do basically speciation, so we can try to figure out where is this coming from, because we don't have any direct answers yet. We continue to look. But I wanted to let you know, since I talked about last time, were the numbers still there? Yes, the numbers are still there. Another one I gave you a brief update on and sent you information is Tahoe Tom's. This is a gas station on the south side of Lake Tahoe that we issued a cleanup abatement order on August 8th because their MTBE levels were exceeding the MCL. They're at 19. And behind them are adjacent hotels that tend to use that water for their guests. So most immediately affected was the lodge right behind them. And in the order, we require that they give them bottled water as well as work on a work plan for a more longer solution. The owners have told us that they cannot afford to pay this because it was around the Labor Day period. The lodge owner obviously took it on themselves to provide the bottled water to their guests. So they are technically in non-compliance, and it's with our prosecution team now to figure out what to do next. But I did want to share that we've all staffed and testing the wells around there. The Lakeside Park Water Company, which also takes water nearby, their samples are good, so they're in a good position. And the Best Western, where you often stay, their water is good as well. So I wanted to let you know. And staff continue to work, of course. Chuck Curtis, I think it is today, so he's meeting with some of the Hotel Owners Association about this problem. So it's an ongoing effort, and like I said, the prosecution team will be working on this since they now are in violation of the Clean Drinking Water. Unfortunately, he's still in, as we're in Tahoe, I'm circling Tahoe here, I'm working around towards the Y section of South Lake Tahoe. We also have PCE in the Lukens drinking water wells that are above the MCL. They have one well now that they could still use. It's one of those for-profit water companies or private water company, small one, that serves a small community over there. So they won't qualify for loans from us. The POC potentially could help them out. They do with the privates. So we do have some numbers that are problematic. Staff are doing an investigation to figure out where is it coming from, and that's ongoing. So I will be reporting back at some point once we have better knowledge about where it could be coming from. There are some auto repair shops in the area. Don't know if that's where it's coming from, but you know, we are looking. I recently sent, I'm moving also, since we're still in the Tahoe region, I'm moving to a Tahoe stormwater letter I just sent to the local governments. I mentioned before that they had turned in plans for their stormwater, which I accepted. I did mention or wrote them a letter that they were deficient in terms of their financial analysis. They had proposed numbers of projects, but could not explain how they would fund those projects. So I asked them to report back to me this summer about to, you know, enhance that report. They did write back and said, we do have funding. We do have funding for the permit terms of the project. So they changed the projects in their list. Now, as a reminder, our permit term ends at the end of 2015. I did write them a letter back, say thank you very much for telling me that you have enough for the short term. I still need long-term planning. So I gave them a new deadline of October 15th to give me their information on their polling and what they're planning to do with that, and then we work on a long-term plan. The reason I am dogged, if you will, on this issue is because there's a lot of concern that the local governments don't have the funding to comply with the TMDL in the out years. And that's a concern in Sacramento, throughout the basin, political leaders. And so I think we just need to be realistic and, you know, talk to each other about what that could be, at least plan for it. It may mean them going to their voters and ask for fees. I know that's difficult, but absent a long-term funding base, they're not going to meet their next round of the TMDL, and that will come back to the board to have to deal with. And that's why I'm setting the groundwork of trying to make good faith effort on the financial side of it. On enforcement, we do have a claim to the abatement order out for comment on BD Dairy. Get my little dairies mixed up there. You heard a little about the nitrate problems in the Hinckley area last night from Mike, and you heard about some of the people that might be affected by the nitrate. So this draft order, which we're taking comments till the end of the month, would maybe affect 5 people for replacement water. And as a reminder on our dairy strategy, we're going to be dealing with replacement water issues in the first salvo. And in the second salvo, we're working on source reduction at these various dairies. So you're likely going to, I don't want to steal the enforcement team's presentation on the quarter report coming up later, next another month, but you will be seeing more cleanup and abatement orders on source reduction for dairies. So we're sort of ramping up our effort in that area. And some of the key staff working on that are sitting behind me. It's a lot of work, but it's important to do. You also see probably next year and more about irrigated ag. We're the only region in the state that does not have an irrigated ag policy, and that's the way the state's moving. So you'll see more about that early next year, and it goes hand in hand with the dairy effort. I'm now going to shift entirely to a different thing, and I would like to talk to you about the water bond, the $7.5 billion water bond. If the voters of California vote for it, it has a lot of wonderful and exciting things in for our state, things that would, money and projects that would help our regional board, as well as the many communities in our region. So I personally am very excited about it. there's $260 million for the State Water Board for small community grants for wastewater treatment projects. I've never seen that much money set aside. Let me back up a little bit. I've worked on bonds since the 80s. What is unique and different about this bond is that it's quite big. It actually sets aside pockets of money for specific problems that over the years people have had a drumbeat about, that there is not dedicated funding for unique things. And those unique things would always have to compete with the bigger pots. They could not compete well. And so that means environmental justice. There are carve-outs in this bond specifically for environmental justice and for small communities. And exciting to me, for the first time, groundwater cleanup, which has never been in the bond in that way before. So, like I mentioned, and there's, I can give you the write-up, is $260 million, as I said, for the Water Board to give grants, loans to wastewater treatment plants for small communities. Another $260 million for public water infrastructure. And what's also exciting about that is both of these two pots, operation and maintenance often the biggest struggle for EJ communities. It's not just building the facility, but giving them the capacity and help to maintain it in out years. I've never in my career seen operation and maintenance in bonds. They want to just do infrastructure. But for the EJ pots, they're allowing, at least for 2 years, operation maintenance funding as part of the bond funding, and that's very exciting. The bond is weighted heavily that each of the pots, I mean all the pots, the fish and game pots, the Conservation Corps monies, that a section of it be set aside for EJ community of 10%. And separate and apart from that, a section is set aside up to 15%, and sometimes more, for technical assistance. I mean, that's what we heard when we were in Bishop. You know, that's what the communities wanted. They didn't just need facility built. They needed help running it. So I'm excited to see a lot of that infrastructure and that discussion in the water bond. As I mentioned before, groundwater, there's $900 million of the water to prevent and clean up contamination of groundwater, particularly those that serve drinking water, where drinking water is affected. $100 million is set aside for competitive grants. Another theme you're seeing in this bond is that the EJ communities are not by themselves, that there's rewarding when bigger districts or bigger groups work with the EJ communities to hook them together, be that sewer, be that drinking water. And I think that's another theme you're seeing in the bond that I think is very exciting for California. Again, the voters vote for it. We hope they do. There's other pots of money that don't come directly to the Water Board, but certainly we benefit from that. There's the routine things to SRF fund and general things, but there's $725 million for water recycling, and not a state agency has been decided as yet as who will receive that. I speculate that will be part of the budget negotiations next year, but how they deal with that $725 million. Our two conservancies that service our region the most received set-aside funding. For a while, that wasn't sure if the conservancies would receive funding, and that would have been hard because they really do help us out solving problems. So the Sierra Conservancy had a carve-out of $25 million, and the Tahoe Conservancy, $15 million. So they're very thrilled, both those conservancies. There was $810 million set for the Irwin process, with 510 of that set aside for the regions. They did set aside in the bond specifically, and haven't gotten the story yet exactly why they picked these numbers specifically, but $24.5 million for the Lahontan region, and that is north and south. The other money is still going to be competitive. I think I did my back of the envelope. That leaves about $118 million left over. I know that Secretary Laird will have a lot to say about how the IRWIC money gets distributed, I'm so untold. So more to come in next year's budget on that, but I think we're doing pretty decent. It's the first time we actually have had an amount set for our regions as a baseline. So I looked at it as the floor and not the ceiling of what could potentially come to a region. It's a lot better than we've had in the past, so it's pretty good. $200 million for multi-benefit stormwater cleanup out of that IRWIC pot. and $100 million for water conservation. Again, these are pots that could still benefit us, or that there's co-benefits for our region. $200 million for in-stream flow projects. That's for the Wildlife Conservation Board. Again, synergies there. $120 million for urban creeks and watersheds, the resources agency. $285 million for watershed restoration, Department of Fish and Game. And another $87.5 million to Fish and Game for water quality, ecosystem, and fish protections. So there's a lot of good, exciting things in this bond, and I just wanted you all to know about that, and you know, urge people to vote for it. If it gets passed, then we'll move to the next stage of how we implement it, and I'll give you updates on that if that should happen. Exciting times. At the beginning, the chair, Dr. Horn, talked about the Water Quality Coordinating Council and that there'll be discussions. I'm seeing a lot of discussion moving to the evolution of the state and the regional boards as groundwater laws are going to get enacted, as water rights provisions strengthen and change, as the drinking water program has come over. People are asking the question that maybe we need to look at how state and regional boards are structured to take on these new responsibilities. New programs are the fracking programs, the marijuana programs. You know, it speaks to an evolution or a change, and so I'm hopeful that the regional board members will be involved in that dialogue as that goes forward, and I've been assured that that would indeed happen. It's kind of exciting times. You've probably read in the papers that some groundwater legislation has been enacted, and for California, this is a big, big deal. It's controversial, but the drought has brought people together to kind of find solutions. Some argue it's not the perfect solution, but everyone agrees that it's a good step forward and will help us all. And there are three main bills that are the cornerstones of that process. One by Assemblymember Dickinson and two by Senator Pavley. Assemblymember Dickinson had what's called the backstop bill, and that is basically these local governments and what their charge is, and when does the state board step in and when does the state board step out in terms of when we have overdraft and problems with those basins. That was really the core of it. There's enforcement processes in it. Clearly, there's great deference in this bill to the local governments finding local solutions to the problems, and they tier the aquifers based on, you know, their threat, their overdraft, their problems. Clearly, the ones that are the most severe, the ones that are going to be focused on first, down to those that are actually doing fine, that won't probably be focused. They all are still going to have to do some planning element to that. DWR will wear the hat of technical assistance and helping work with the local governments to get these plans done and help train and help get them to be successful. And unfortunately, I guess the water board, state water plays a role of a bad cop and gets to step in if it doesn't work. I know that the state board doesn't want to get into this. I think they're hoping that the locals will solve these problems, and it sounds like that's the direction it's going. So maybe they will never even use this backstop provision. So I wanted to let you know about that. Fran Pavley's bill is the one that has the bulk of how you do the planning, when it's due, what those plans look like, the tiers of the agencies, again, the due different plans. The first salvo of plans are due 2020, so for the critical ones, and 2022 for the less critical in the next tier down groundwater basins. At the end of the session, Fran Pavley also offered a third bill as part of the suite of packages because there were concerns from the agricultural community and others about how certain provisions would work. So they worked with various groups to fine-tune, if you will, the backstop provisions to allay fears in the Capitol from some of the groups. And they didn't lay all the fears, but they got enough to get the bills voted through and off to the governor, and he has indicated he will sign those three package bills. These are the issues I had wanted to cover today. I'm not sure if there's any other questions you have or any of these.
Any questions for our executive officer? Mr. Dyes? Thank you very much. So.